I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Peterson, and it is my privilege to represent TIAA CREF and TCAM Core Property Operating Fund. In the first appeal, this court held that the lease obligated PMI to pay for all of the parking places that it leased from TCAM. The reason we are back here today is because following remand, PMI managed to convince the court to deny any opportunity for relief, and because it did not pay for the lease parking places that this court held that it was required to pay in defiance of this court's order.
Is the position of the appellant now that mitigation is not available to Pacific Market International?
Yes and no. Okay. Yes, it is available if, as a matter of law, a court determines that notwithstanding the Walker case, mitigation is a viable defense. And it would have an opportunity to present that defense in, for example, the show cause hearing that naturally follows from RCW 7.24080. But we cited to the court below the Walker case, which says that where both parties have an equal opportunity to mitigate in a contract setting, neither party has a duty to mitigate, and neither party will be determined to have lost their damages because of that.
So at the show cause hearing, if we send it back, there'd be the legal question of whether it's available, and then factually what the mitigation might be, assuming that the trial court says, in this case, it is available. Then what if there were disputed facts at the show cause hearing? How does that play out procedurally?
Well, I believe that at a show cause hearing, a court can resolve disputed facts, and it would be able to do that if, for example, there was a question about the parking count.
Right.
If there was a question about the amount per stall that the City of Seattle was charging at that time, those could be resolved at a fact-finding hearing. But I believe that court, in fact, I believe this court can hold that as a matter of law, under the facts that are before this court, that the parties had an equal opportunity to mitigate. The fact of the matter is that PMI controlled its parking spaces. It had the opportunity to go directly to the City of Seattle's operator, Republic Parking, and get whatever passes it needed, and it had every opportunity to sell those passes, sublease, or whatever. So it had at least, if not a better opportunity to mitigate.
Clarify, what money you're claiming? I mean, there apparently was some misunderstanding at the last argument about what was actually happening between the parties. My understanding now is that PMI did for a while pay under protest, and that that was an amount that TCAM believed was the right amount absent the dispute. And it was actually said at oral argument that that was continuing, but apparently that isn't the case. So at what point did PMI stop paying under protest, and then have they started paying again since then? Is there a gap that we're dealing with here for money damages?
Yes. So PMI paid under protest prior to filing their complaint, and therefore there was nothing owed when they filed their complaint seeking a declaratory judgment.
And has it, so that money is you're keeping that money. There's no claim where they want to get that back now. Is that right?
Well, there was a claim that they wanted to get that money back, and they won at the trial court level. They won a summary.
In the first case?
Yeah, in the first case. Okay. They won at the trial court level, and they presented a judgment to the trial judge, or it was a superior court judge. There was no trial, which included not only the declaration of the meaning of the lease, but it also included a judgment to recover all of the payments they had made under protest. We did not oppose that because it was naturally flowed from the decision of the court of the superior court.
So did you satisfy that judgment?
No.
No. Okay. So there
we
was
appealed.
us supersedious or something.
Yeah, we appealed.
Okay.
And they continued to pay under protest for many months throughout most of the litigation until shortly before the cross motions for summary judgment. We both filed cross motions for summary. We scheduled them simultaneously. Again, this was a legal question. What does the lease say? Are they required to pay for parking or are they not required to pay for parking? But at that point in time, they did owe about $35,000 in parking that they had not paid under protest.
At what time was this?
This was just before the summary judgment hearing. And we put that...
How much did they pay under protest up to the point where they stopped paying? Do you know, roughly?
I believe it was like $175,000.
Okay, and so then at the time that you filed your cross motions, they had stopped paying and there was like a gap of $35,000.
Correct.
Okay.
And we certainly had no reason to believe that they weren't going to continue to make payments under protest. But at that point in time, when we prepared our brief, it came to our attention that they indeed had not made some payments, and it was now $35,000. And so we put that in our brief. And we even submitted a proposed judgment, or order, I should say, an order that asked for the relief we were seeking, namely to interpret the lease as we viewed it and to provide for the damages. And I see that I'm almost out of time, but... The point.
So your position basically is that the trial court made a mistake by not allowing a show cause hearing where this could all have been thrashed out. And as far as you're concerned, I think maybe your opening brief and your reply brief were a little bit different. But correct me if I'm wrong. It seems that based on what you're saying today, is that your position is that if there was a show cause hearing, PMI would have the opportunity to bring up whatever they wanted to bring up about mitigation. You would bring up the Walker case. The court would make a decision, and hopefully the right one.
Yeah. Very simple.
And either order mitigation or not, depending on how the court an issue that really hasn't squarely been decided by anybody yet.
Exactly. It was never decided by the court below. And so it wasn't on appeal here. And there was also 54C, and we also asked for an opportunity to amend the complaint, and those were denied as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Reese Farron representing Pacific Market International, which I will call PMI. On April 13, 2015, this court entered its decision, and it did exactly what TCAM asked it to do, which was to enter judgment on the interpretation of the lease. This went back to the trial court, and the trial court did exactly that. Six months after this court entered its ruling, TCAM went back to the trial court, gave notice of presentation, asking and filed a 175-page motion declaration and exhibits asking for $148,000 in damages, $31,194 in interest, $14,829 in late fees, now for an entry of award of money damages 8 days thereafter. There would be no trial, no discovery, and there could not be because the remand was for entry of judgment on the interpretation of the lease.
What was the amount requested, you say?
$148,299.24 in damages, $31,194.70 in interest, and then $14,829.92 in late fees. Now, the trial court was bound to follow its direction from this court. I don't think the trial court has the luxury or the liberty to decide that it's going to vary from your directions. When Judge Middow got this, and in fact, if we go back to the end of the appellate briefing in what I will call TCAM 1, what TCAM asked for is, as the lease plainly states, PMI shall lease 34 parking spaces in the garage. The court should remand this case for entry of an order to this effect and should award fees. And that's what you did, Your Honors. And it's well settled that an appellate court's mandate is binding on the lower court and must be strictly followed. The court doesn't have the luxury to decide it's going to now ignore the decision, right or wrong, that mitigation is not available. And now try a case for damages and allow mitigation. We would, frankly, prefer a trial on mitigation, and there will likely be a lawsuit for a breach and a trial, and at that point, mitigation will be raised. So,
what are you saying exactly? You say there likely will be a trial?
I think we'll get sued for breach of the lease.
Who's you're going to get sued by who?
By TCAM.
Well.
So if they can't get what they're asking for in the declaratory judgment,
I think
what's
that's,
left over, then they're going to file a second
I
lawsuit.
Think that's the consequence, Your Honor, yes.
Well, wouldn't you then say that they're collaterally estopped from bringing that lawsuit if we adhered to the version of our opinion that you say we
right.
ruled?
That's not the issue before the court here, but if it, in fact, was not the issue litigated before the trial court, then I don't think there is collateral estoppel. But let me ask you, and this dovetails with my argument on judicial estoppel, and I want to get to whether the appeal is not timely. That's an important threshold issue.
We'll get to it, but before we get to it, let's have you address the question that is raised by TCAM, which is that why exactly is a show cause hearing not the appropriate vehicle for going into the question of how much you owe?
Well, because what TCAM is asking for with 8 days' notice, and this is what Judge Minow said, you can't come to court, essentially file a new claim, ask for $148,000, close to $200,000 with interest and fees, and have that decided on 8 days' notice. The Declaratory Judgment Act says that if there is a dispute of facts, then the matter is set for trial. And that's exactly what you did not send the case back to the trial court for. But I think a fundamental problem.
Well, why is I mean, the thing is, our decision declared that you owed the money. You had been paying the
right.
money. We were allowed to think at oral argument, I guess, that all of the money had been paid. And so, you know, all that remained to be done was that, you know, a final judgment confirming that TCAM gets the money that it's owed. Now, somehow it's come back that, no, actually, you don't even owe all of the money that the contract that we interpreted says you owe. And I just, it's a little hard for me to see procedurally why a show cause hearing would not be suitable for that. It's, I mean, show cause hearing often can result in a trial, can it not? I mean, eight days was too long? Have a continuance. I mean, I just don't understand why we have to be up here again when it seems really clear that that PMI owes money to TCAM on the contract. Why would anybody think we meant anything other than that? Why would anybody think that we meant, okay, you only owe the money that you paid up until 3 months before the argument, but after that you don't owe any money?
Well, Your Honor, the ruling from the court was that the interpretation of the contract was that PMI shall pay for 34 spaces, whether it uses them or not.
Right, and weren't there like cross motions for declaratory judgment?
There were.
I mean, there was a concern. What was the meaning of the contract?
That's correct.
And, you know, so that was the dispute that was brought to this court for resolution.
Right.
And then the question is, what is the fallout after that? What is necessary to make the meaning of that decision reality?
I don't think there's anything left to make to clarify what Your Honor said about the interpretation of the lease. But the question is whether, having made that ruling, having interpreted it, are you now in a position of enforcing that contract for any breach that occurs from the moment you enter that ruling forever? That's not what the claim was for declaratory judgment, not for well, we don't know.
All right. Well, let's say that the trial court had interpreted the contract correctly the first time around and had ruled in favor of TCAM. All right, on a declaratory judgment. Gentlemen, here you are. You've asked me what the contract means. It means what TCAM says it means. Okay, now what? Wouldn't the next thing be that PMI would then pay TCAM the money that was owed under the declaration of the meaning of the contract?
If you said that TCAM...
Did I say it wrong? That PMI should pay the money that is owed under TCAM's interpretation of the contract?
If TCAM wins.
Well, suppose they had won, which, in effect,
they
should have the first time around. They should have won the motion for summary judgment when the cross motions for summary judgment were first presented to Judge Middow. She should have ruled in favor of TCAM. Now, what if she had done that? Where would you be? Wouldn't you be paying TCAM the entire amount owed?
We would be.
Or wouldn't you, or you would be then saying to Judge Mida, all right, now they say that we owe X. Actually, we owe X minus Y because of mitigation.
You know, Your Honor.
And wouldn't she have heard that argument?
I don't know.
What
I don't.
Do? Isn't that the logical and practical reality of what lawyers expect in a situation like this?
Your Honor, I don't know because TCAM has taken inconsistent positions throughout its pleading. TCAM first said this was a case about declaratory relief, but no damages, and that's what you heard today. At CPU 95, what TCAM's motion for summary judgment in the trial court said was the PMI breached, that we breached, and we owe $35,710. And just so that we're clear on the record, these protest payments were not made every month. What would happen is that PMI would get behind on these protest payments. We didn't think we owed them. We would get billed, and then we would pay we paid five payments over a three-year span, and they were big chunks of money. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as though we were paying up front every single month. But at the motion for summary judgment, then what TCAM said is, well, PMI breached. Damages are $35,000. Then when we got to the reply and summary judgment, what TCAM says at CP 1024, neither party brought a breach of contract claim, notwithstanding that they just asked for damages for a breach. Then we get to the appeal, and in TCAM 1, TCAM said, is TCAM, rather than PMI, entitled to a money judgment and fees? And that was $35,000. Then we get to the end of the appeal, and the exhortation of this court is the thrust of the case is interpretation only. Only claims asserted were declaratory judgment. So failure to mitigate is not relevant. It's not relevant because now they're saying it's not an issue. And in fact, on the in the reply in support of the motion for leave to amend, what the court said is, the only issue before the court was the interpretation of a lease. That's CP 2861. At 2860, TCAM said the issue of damages was not before the Court of Appeals or the Superior Court. So, Your Honor, they've taken inconsistent positions throughout this case. So when you ask me, was it pled or tried, I can't tell you. Anyway, PMI would ask that the court dismiss the appeal.
TCAM's position throughout this has been absolutely consistent. This was a declaratory judgment action case. And what I've said to this court and what I've said throughout, and we've said in our briefs and everything, is that the issue in a declaratory judgment action is, what does the lease mean? Now, what they've done is they've taken that out of context. And to the Superior Court, they stated that we said we were not injured. They took the argument that mitigation doesn't relate to a declaratory judgment action, which is absolutely true. Mitigation is not a defense to a declaratory judgment action. It's a defense to a damage action. And this was a declaratory judgment action. And so what I've said over and over and over again has been, this is a declaratory judgment action. Mitigation doesn't matter. Now, if we get to the phase of talking about damages, certainly mitigation matters. That's all I ever said. But they've taken that out of context and argued to the Superior Court that we said we were not damaged, which was absolutely false. And now they're arguing to this court that we have taken inconsistent positions. We've said the same thing all the way through. If the court is concerned at all about the issue of whether the appeal was timely filed, I would like to address that issue in my remaining time. The civil rules allow multiple motions for reconsideration. Civil Rule 59B and J both say that multiple motions can be done. There's no limit on it. The rules of appellate procedure give 30 days to appeal under 5.2A and 5.2E after an order for including an order for reconsideration. Both of our motions for reconsideration were filed within 10 days, so they were both timely motions. And the appeal was filed within 30 days of the court's final decision denying the second motion for reconsideration and denying the motion to appeal, which was to amend the complaint,
answer, which was filed with the first motion for reconsideration. So in terms of timing, everything lined up with the rules. The rules do not state that a second motion must be filed within the a motion for reconsideration must be filed within the time frame of the first motion for reconsideration. There's nothing like that in the rules. And in fact, Rule of Appellate Procedure 59 or 2.4C pulls in, if you appeal a motion for reconsideration, it pulls in previous orders, including the initial judgment or decision. And the limited case law that's available on this point is not consistent with what they're saying. It allowed a second an appeal after a second motion for reconsideration. And in that case, the decision changed. The rules should not be construed in such a way as to limit someone's opportunity to get relief. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our proceedings this morning.